go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 21st day of April, 2023. This is The Horn, headon.live. It's where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. This is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between and the great globe round. And, if you pop in right now at headon.live and click on chat room, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers thereunto. And that means, she said, refreshing the screen. That means Irish Dave and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, y'all. And you will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become man cave. He's capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, as well as Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician, as well as Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger in Oregon. This is a case, given who's in the room now versus how many moderators we have. Say it, Skeeve, and I don't, not soup, beat you to it. Say it. Too many cops. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Friday on the front porch for this 21st day of April, 2023. It will be this is the penultimate Friday on the front porch for April 2023. We got one more coming a week from this evening. And, wow. See, this is what happens when the warm weather comes. The months go bzzz, and they're gone before you hardly know they're there. But, oh, what a beautiful day today. Absolutely beautiful. Annette and I got out and ran some errands. Forgot the two main things that I went out for, but I confess I got enwrapped in a big box home improvement store ogling water heaters and a couple of other things. My God, the price of a refrigerator. No, we don't need, we're fine on the fridge and that, yeah. But I was just looking at what I forget if it was a new Samsung or something. Damn, it was beautiful, just gorgeous, pretty enamel paintwork, everything. But I was there to actually look at water heaters and and then I went and looked at string trimmers. It's amazing. I mentioned that Ferg told me ours had been stolen. Gee, I wonder who did that. Wonder who has. Well, never mind. Don't speculate, Robin. There's no point to it. But anyway, I was amazed to find out that the battery-operated string trimmers that cost me like $150 3 years ago is now twice as expensive. Yay. Also looked at rear-tine tillers, because I'd like to get my garden back. I remember buying one, but it was a very long time ago, for less than $400, and the very same thing is $1,000 now. I don't think rear tine tiller technology has improved that much. But while I was busy being lost in home improvement fantasies, I forgot to go to Kroger's and get things like distilled water and half and half for our coffee. Well, now, Theo, you know, don't say that. Theo says, I'm just here to harangue our poor, long-suffering Ms. Robin with my troves of useless knowledge. I have yet to find any of your knowledge useless, because I find it enjoyable. So, therefore, take it easy on yourself. And just before we jump into everything, a viewing tip. For those of you with HBO, Annette and I watched this over the course of the last couple of nights. The Jason Isbell documentary, Running With My Eyes Closed, is an absolutely brilliantly put together biocumentary of one of the most talented and one of the most well-respected musicians and artists in the country today, that being Jason Isbell and his band, the 400 Unit. And it delves into the music, it delves into their life during the pandemic, his relationship with an absolutely amazing woman, his spouse, Amanda Pearl Shires. It's a really, really good watch. It is. And for those of you who are Ted Lasso fans, this week's episode is probably in three seasons of a show with absolutely brilliant episodes. This week's episode is, and Annette and I are definitely at consensus on this one. This week's episode of Ted Lasso is probably the best episode they have ever done. So good, in fact, that we watched it twice, and we'll probably watch it a third time, just sorting out all the details. Then I'll kind of, this is probably TMI, but the character of Rebecca Wilton, played by Hannah Waddingham, she's kind of my avatar. I mean, just an amazing actor, and creating an absolutely captivating and compelling character as the owner of the Richmond AFC Richmond Greyhounds. And her story in this episode is just, yeah, one of those. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we say thank you to our 21st day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you so very much to Janice. Thank you, Janice. And thank you to Harold, President and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you to Tracy in L.A. Thank you so very much. And thanks to Clarence in South Carolina, Stan, or wherever he may be on the road, I'm not sure which, for jumping in. And where that leaves us as we attempt to get caught up and move downhill toward finishing the month of April, the deficit, let's see, yesterday we started at 1,700. And we knocked it down to, we knocked it down to something like 1480. So we're at 1780. Or, yeah, call it 1700. We basically funded one of last week's programs last week. So We are unfunded for the entirety of this week and unfunded for $200 of last Friday on the front porch. We play a constant game of catch-up around here. So it would be great with the bills that we are facing. It would be magnificent if we could scrounge up a Friday on the front porch community-made miracle this evening, a $1,700 or some massive major amount thereof miracle. Yeah, it would feel miraculous, without a doubt. And if you want to help out, go over to headon.live. The PayPal button is there on the main page. If you'd like to contribute via Venmo, it's at Bob-Kincaid-1. One of those places where Bob is still in existence. But Venmo's good. Everything is good. U.S. Postal Service is good. But Venmo and PayPal and Patreon get there to reach the program the most quickly. It is, like I said, Friday on the front porch, so that means that here in about 45 minutes, we will go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we gather at the end of every week to cuss and discuss any remaining items and issues of the week around the extraordinary, ordinary Friday on the front porch roundtable. And there's a button at headon.live at the top of the page. You don't even have to load up Skype or anything. That button will take you straight into the conversation. And new voices are always welcome. We love new voices in on Friday on the front porch. So start lining up, get into the conversation. Don't wait until the last minute, and we will see where that conversation takes us. Again, in about 45 minutes' time. That having been said, issues of the day. I hate it when the other side of a partisan divide decides to jump in and do a little back scratching. And by that, I mean retired Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer was speaking to the first Judicial Circuit Court Conference in Boston, and he took some questions, and somebody said, "Hey, how about that crooked old bastard Fappy Thomas?" No, I'm sure they didn't put it that way. They're more polite than I am, for starters. But Breyer said, "As far as I'm concerned, I sat next to him on the bench for 28 years. I like him. He's a friend of mine. I've never seen him do anything underhanded or say anything underhanded." No, he's made all of his hate known in a perfectly overhanded fashion. And honestly, that's kind of lawyerly weasel wordy there, what Stephen Breyer said. I'm sure he's never seen Fappy Thomas go on a $500,000 vacation with his dear, dear friend Harlan Crow, who prior to Fappy going on the court would not have known the difference between Fappy and Adam's house cat. Never seen him say anything underhanded either. I guess in Stephen Breyer's world, calling for the eradication of the rights of more than half of the people in this country doesn't qualify as underhandedness. He just has a principled, conservative difference of opinion. And the people capable of becoming pregnant in this country can go and pound sand. Jesus. And I'm sure that over in the multimillionaire for-profit media, they're pearl-clutching and hand-wringing and recalling the dear, dear, precious friendship between fat, dead Tony Scalia and RBG, whom, had he gotten his way, probably would have, fat, dead Tony probably would have had RBG clapped in irons or thrown off the bench, you know, for being a woman. But since I've opened the program with the corruption of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas, Eric Lutz over at Vanity Fair today talked to Sheldon Whitehouse, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, who very badly wants Fappy to face something in the way of consequences for his gross misconduct. Whitehouse said that the attention and this pressure on the court and the outrage that many federal judges feel and the prospect of hearings and legislation being debated, yeah, that to me all is a big step forward. I'm very much glass half full about the progress that's been made in the last weeks, though I am glass half empty about where this ends. We don't know where this ends, Senator Whitehouse went on to say. And Lutz, it went on to write that Fappy feels little to no responsibility to publicly acknowledge any conflict of interest concerns around his friendship with Crow and the involvement of Thomas's wife, Ginny, in Trump's efforts to overturn the Constitution of the United States via the 2020 election. Remember, we had the story in yesterday's program about how it turns out that Harlan Crow, despite claiming that he's never had any business before the court with my dear friend and cigar-smoking buddy Clarence on it, that he was in fact a member of the Founders Committee of the Club for Growth when the Club for Growth was submitting amicus curiae briefs in the attack on the McCain-Feingold bill, and that, lo and behold, the dissent that Fappy filed in that case could just as easily have been a dead lift from the amicus curiae brief filed by the Club for Growth. For the purposes of his article at Vanity Fair, Eric Lutz spoke to Sarah Lipton Lubet. She's executive director of Take Back the Court, who told Lutz that the fascist wing of the court is pursuing an ideological agenda on behalf of a small elite, and they're going to continue bulldozing that path until they're stopped. And SCOTUS has become so powerful that Congress itself, even if it wanted to, would find it difficult to rein it in. Sarah Lipton Lubet said, lacking sharp legislative teeth, Democrats are essentially hoping to outsource immediate oversight to the executive and judicial branches, calling for a Justice Department investigation, which has yet to open. The phrase "has yet to" in that sentence, doing the work of a different phrase, ain't gonna. I wonder if Fappy ever sits around and thinks about the fact that when he finally goes to his long home, that he will be remembered as being crooked as a dog's hind leg. So crooked he'll have to be screwed into the dirt when he dies. I know. So that's certainly a starting place, and quite possibly a nice topic for discussion when we go over into the old holler tree. And here's another example of the ongoing, what do we call this, the death of, I know, right-wingers have wrung their hands, et cetera, in the past years, anytime anybody called them a fascist and said, what happened to civility? And it, no, this isn't that. Up in Michigan, there was a, I can't believe I'm saying this. Up in Michigan, there was a Cub Scouts meeting. That's all, a Cub Scouts meeting. And by the way, no one was shot. Winner. But the altercation began at the Cub Scouts meeting when the person who ultimately was the victim in this whole Donnybrook. Addressed a woman who had parked in a handicapped parking spot without any kind of handicapped placard or decal or sticker or anything to indicate that she had the right to park there. Well, The woman that got called out picked up her phone and called a 26-year-old by the name of Tyrone Sledge. Tyrone Sledge eventually showed up at the Cub Scout meeting, and he walked up to the 47-year-old victim and cold-cocked him, knocking him the hell out. He then takes a kid by the hand, apparently his kid, and left the meeting. According to police, Tyrone Sledge allegedly advised the victim he was armed and threatened the victim before punching him in the head. This just, because we can't have a Cub Scout meeting now without a brawl breaking out and somebody bringing their Freedom Protector again to the Cub Scout meeting. And in the video, you can see the guy walk in, punch the guy in the head, and turn around and walk out. Tyrone Sledge has been charged with assault with intent to do great bodily harm. When he cold-cocked the guy was knocked out, taken to the hospital, at one point listed in critical condition. His condition is, however, improving. Because God knows you need to take your Freedom Protector with you to the Cub Scout meeting. This happened this past Tuesday, about 20 miles north of Detroit. And as of the publication of the Kansas City Star article on it, cops are looking for 26-year-old Tyrone Sledge. Oh, God. And he had not been caught as of Friday, April 21st. Police Commissioner Bill Dwyer said the fact that this suspect barged into a Cub Scout meeting and assaulted the victim at an event designed for children and families shows the brazenness of this incident. Because freedom. You know. Wolverines! America, greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God. And we have new audio about the Sidney Powell. There's a recording of former White House MAGA supporter, economic advisor, was that what he was, Peter Navarro? And they ran it over on MSNBC, much to the apparent joy of Nicole Wallace.
$1 million settlement in the Dominion Fox News case will not mean the end of the steady drip of damaging revelations involving Fox and those who used Fox to peddle the big lie to try to overturn an election and, by extension, our democracy. Take, for example, this from former Fox News producer turned whistleblower Abby Grossberg. This is Ted Cruz on November 7th, 2020. That's the day President Joe Biden was projected to be the winner by all of the networks of the 2020 election. He was on a phone call with Fox's Maria Bartiromo, stressing the need for proof of any actual election fraud. Listen.
Can't just be, you know, somebody tweeted this. It's got to be demonstrable facts that can be laid out with evidence.
Because we that's had what this audio yesterday.
Not just an allegation, but actual facts. And so, you know, I'm hopeful, you know, I hope when Rudy comes on the show tomorrow, he has some of those facts, and I hope the legal team continues to lay out the specific evidence, because that's what it's going to take to prevail in court.
They were all pinning all of their hopes on Rudy and Sidney Powell. Explains why Team Trump would go on to lose 61 times in court, judge after judge after judge, in courts all across the country. Some of those judges appointed by Donald Trump himself, as well as the United States Supreme Court, dismissed Trump's claims of fraud and his attempts to overturn the 2020 election through the courts. And they lost because, as they very well knew, as Ted Cruz knew, there wasn't any evidence of fraud. Recall what former Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers testified to before the January 6th Select Committee about a phone call meeting he had with Rudy Giuliani.
At some point, did one of them make a comment that they didn't have evidence, but they had a lot of theories?
That was Mr. Giuliani.
And what exactly did he say, and how did that come up?
My recollection, he said, we've got lots of theories, we just don't have the evidence. And I don't know if that was a gaffe, or maybe he didn't think through what he said, but both myself and others in my group, the three in my group and my counsel, both remembered that specifically, and afterwards we kind of laughed about it.
I guess it could be funny, but the harm it's done is undeniable, right? There was never any evidence. The lack of, quote, actual facts and specific evidence, as Ted Cruz and Rusty Bowers put it. As Ted Cruz puts it during a phone call on November 7th with Maria Bartiromo. But then it doesn't stop him from working as a senator to overturn the election result. Here he is on January
6th. Lock him up.
There's no evidence objecting to the certification of President Joe Biden's Electoral College win. Watch.
I want to speak to the Republicans who are considering voting against these objections. I understand your concerns, but I urge you to pause and think. What does it say to the nearly half the country that believes this election was rigged if we vote not even to consider the claims of illegality and fraud in this election?
What Cruz and what Fox still can't grasp is that half the country believed that because they were lied to by people like Ted Cruz and Fox News. Cruz, unsurprisingly, did not respond to a request for comment from MSNBC. And today there's more. We have more evidence today showing that members of Team Trump, easy for me to say, had their own doubts about whether the people who claimed to have the goods about election fraud actually ever had any of the goods about election fraud. In an audio recording that is exclusive to Deadline White House, former Trump administration official Peter Navarro, who played an integral role in peddling election fraud claims, expresses his own doubts about attorney Sidney Powell's claims and her credibility. Here he is talking to Abby Grossberg more than 2 weeks after the January 6th insurrection. Listen.
Sidney Powell, she sends me stuff by mistake. There's an Abby in her office. There's an Abby in her office, and this through the whole Flynn trial, she sends me stuff, and then she frantically calls or emails me saying, please delete it, it's confidential.
That horse is out of the barn, right?
So she mistakenly like sent me something on Signal on that phone. I'm like, I wonder what that is, but I'm not going to open it because I don't want it to be evidence. And then comes like the call 2 minutes later, please delete it. That wasn't intended for you.
Well, you have no idea how much damage she did to our efforts. She was like the turning point in our inability to prove the case, because she was like so far out there that people like pulled back. We were on the verge of some breakthroughs in the states at state legislature level, and then that happened, and it was like Katie barred the door. It's like, damn, just not good.
Now, interestingly, in a statement to MSNBC, when he learned we were going to play this tape, Peter Navarro didn't walk away from any of it. In fact, he doubled down on the statements he made about Sidney Powell, saying this, quote, Sidney Powell is basically the worst thing that ever happened to the election integrity issue. As always, I'm being candid with Abby Grossberg, just as I am being candid with the American people. Internal doubts about the veracity of the...
Oh, God, I shouldn't laugh. This is deadly serious. But I do love me some maggot cannibalism. Here, let's pull the wishbone. As they go chewing and chomping on each other. God, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Meanwhile, down in Florida, there appears to be a county sheriff down there who actually doesn't cotton to anti-Semitism. Amazing in fascist Florida, but here we are. I'm talking about Volusia County Sheriff Mike Chitwood, who has made a point of not tolerating any forms of anti-Semitism. Yeah, Mike Chitwood has been the target of a number of Nazis there in Volusia County. And three people have now been arrested for making online threats against him. The latest is Christian Zapata, age 23, who, like the other two defendants, lived with their mother. Christian Zapata went on 4chan, home of the incels, and posted in all caps, "I will kill Chitwood, mark my words." And Christian Zapata's sister told the police detectives from Ansonia that her brother was always on his computer, often participating in extremist chat rooms and talking to unknown people about conspiracy theories and white supremacist ideology. You know, the kind of white supremacist who helped Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis become governor the first time. And probably the second. According to the report, the sister also indicated her brother was fascinated with, God, Adolf Hitler. And when the cops went to arrest him, he told the cops that he was a nationalist and that the First Amendment provided him the right to post that he was going to kill the elected sheriff of Volusia County, Florida. Also on 4chan, and also arrested, were Richard Golden of New Jersey and Tyler Meyer of San Diego. All this because Sheriff Chitwood denounced a group working in his county in Florida spreading anti-Semitic garbage. The name of the organization... No, this couldn't possibly be an anti-Semitic organization. Come now, please. The Goyim Defense League, the GDL, they were leaving anti-Semitic flyers on people's doorsteps. They were hanging anti-Jewish banners from pedestrian bridges during Daytona 500 weekend. They held a demonstration outside Chabad of South Orlando. They harassed pedestrians and motorists. And then they hung signs at the Daytona International Speedway saying things like, "Henry Ford was right about the Jews." And then they used a projector to show anti-Semitic slogans on the outside of the track, including one message that said, "Hitler was right." And Sheriff Chitwood said, "These scumbags came to the wrong county. We're not going to tolerate this. This is not about free speech. This is about violence." The head of the Goyim Defense League is a nasty little Nazi named John Minadeo. He says, meanwhile, "No, the GDL has never, ever done anything violent toward Jews." And the thing is, the GDL is apparently made up of a bunch of dead-enders, hard cases, and ne'er-do-wells. I bet I know how they vote. He said, "Let's take a look at these cowardly scumbags." And started reading off a rap sheet that listed things like stalking, threatening a public official, aggravated assault, murder, terroristic threats, vandalism for defacing a memorial for victims of the Pulse nightclub massacre, and, of course, soliciting a 14-year-old for sex. Then when the Daily Beast interviewed him, Sheriff Chitwood said... sent a message directly to John Minadeo. "Excuse my French, but fuck you, motherfucker." You know, I'm sure there are things that happen in Volusia County, but damn. That's kind of refreshing, isn't it? And so you got three arrests of Nazi dweebs who live in their mama's houses, are terminally online, constantly covered in Cheeto and Dorito nacho Dorito dust. And live to post hate on 4chan. just, well, Nazi's gonna Nazi. Oh, and by the way, thank you to Clarence for getting us started this evening. And Ralph says, I'm offering a $25 three-alarm fire challenge. My apartment fire alarm has gone off three times. Nothing major so far. Oh, Ralph, you have my complete sympathy. Shades, maybe it's a New Jersey thing. Because that harkens back to the Saturday night before the Sunday screening of Devil Put the Coal in the Ground in Princeton, where the fire alarm went off not once but twice, and I hesitated to go for a soak in the bathtub in my room because, I didn't want to have to jump up out of the tub and get redressed and run out and stand in the rain for another 45 minutes while they figured out what was wrong with the fire alarm system. Sorry, Ralphs. I guess you got to take them seriously, but there's a $25 challenge on the table that would get us down to $16.50 as we try to finish the month of April, something approaching funded. By the way, going back to FAPI and the anti-choice wing of the party, the fascist wing of the Supreme Court, renaming contest, here's my entry for the anti-choice majority of the Supreme Court, death panel. Ooh, brought to you by Godzilla from Wasilla. Sarah, Caribou Barbie, Palin. Thanks, Scott. And in regard to Breyer defending FAPI, Darlene in Connecticut says, that's why I have no qualms about investigating all the justices on the SCOTUS. As much as I like Sonia and KBJ, although I'm not worried about the latter, she's the smartest justice on that court and hasn't been there long enough to get corrupted if she'd ever even fall into that trap. That group is like a dysfunctional, entwined couple. It's them against the world. Not only RBG raving about her friendship with Scalia, but she was the first to come out and praise Kavanaugh after he ascended to one of the thrones. And don't forget Sonia covering for Gorsuch over the face mask debacle. Conclusion, I'm sick of the lot of them, minus one, possibly two. They can't see the forest for the trees. P.S., as far as the story out of Michigan is concerned, I've gotten dirty looks even with a handicap placard. You, Darlene? And I can't. There was no call for this dude to go in and sucker punch a 47-year-old man. And the serving as the Horn Optimism Department, Lee in New York says, stop it, Robin. February is the only month that never has a 30th day. Would you rather have long winter months? Well, I mean, don't we already? December's 31 days, January's 31 days, yay, my birthday. And even March, which is half winter and half trying to be spring, is 31 days. Yeah, you're right. Thank goodness February's only 28. Oh, and speaking of birthdays, I am so tickled. I'm so pleased to wish my best friend in the whole wide world, Annette, the happiest of birthdays tomorrow. She shares a birthday with Earth Day. because the first Earth Day was April 22nd of 1970. I will never forget it because that's the day my precious purple bicycle was stolen from the bike rack at my elementary school. Let it go, Robin. Let it go. But happy birthday. Happy birthday, my dear, dear, dear friend Annette. Even though it's going to pour tomorrow, we're going to try to do something to commemorate it. And Steve in New York points out, subject line, Sasquatch Powell. That's a really shitty thing to do to a Sasquatch. I just call her Squidney. If she's the worst thing, what is the best thing that happened to the Trump attempt to overturn the Constitution? Mr. Crack Pillow? $5 million. And Darlene says, aw, happy birthday, Annette. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you. Not sure what we're going to do, but it's going to be fun and rainy. Oh, and by the way, another TV viewing tip, although it's a bit premature yet. Star Trek Strange New Worlds premieres in June, I think June 15th. I'm looking forward to it. And it will be, it will run on Pluto TV for free. The first season was fantastic. Ralph says, happy birthday, Annette. So, Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1 will be for free on Pluto TV, the free streaming service of Paramount TV. You can also get Season 2 of Star Trek Picard on Pluto TV, as well as a number of other Star Trek franchises. We're Star Trek nerds around here. For sure. Yeah, Darlene adds, please don't insult a squatch. Oh, well, happy birthday, Steve from Georgistan. Wow, Steve says, mine's today. Annette and my birthdays are a day apart. Mine's today. Like me, she's a Taurus. She is, in fact, a Taurus, and don't screw with a Taurus. If you mess with a bull, you get the horns. Right. Where else to go? It's been a long time since I've seen a story that has George effing Will's photo on it. But here we are. George effing Will has decided to unburden himself of his thoughts on the settlement of the Dominion case. Further butt-hurting the maggot loyalists out there. Because the maggots were terribly upset about the lawsuit in the first place. Maggots think that Fox News got taken to the cleaners over something that they never should have been touched for. Writing yesterday for the Washington Post, George effing Will argues that the settlement was, quote, in his words, good for both parties and for the law. Will writing, Fox News never ventured into the thin ice of arguing that it ever even had a smidgen of evidence to support what was said by the Dominion detractors. By settling, thereby avoiding a trial, Fox News was spared further dissemination of embarrassments. These include internal communications that prove two things. First, pecuniary motives led Fox News to pander to Trump adorers who, furious that on election night the channel had correctly called Arizona for Joe Biden, and were fleeing like lemmings to Newsmax, an unwavering defender of the indefensible. And second, when not toadying to Trump, some Fox News personnel were saying, in effect, that they wished that he, like the Wicked Witch of the West, would melt away. It's worth noting that George effing Will was, in fact, at one point in the past, a Fox News TV Radio Rwanda contributor. That's back before Fox News was taken over by maggots. At the tender age of 81, though, having been a lifelong baseball-loving Republican, waxing eloquent and sometimes downright weepy about the national pastime, George Will has also become mirabile addictu, a supporter of President Biden. He pulled no punches, though. He said in recent months, there's been an avalanche of evidence that Fox News thinks of its audience as akin to campus snowflakes easily triggered into trauma. Oh, shut up. And that Fox News should be their safe space where viewers will encounter nothing such as news, e.g. there is no evidence for anything Trump said about 2020 voting irregularities, that might make them sad. Otherwise, they might bolt to Newsmax or some other source of solace. Fox News' robust ratings indicate that its viewers' appetite for the preposterous exceeds their pride. Kind of a home on the range kind of vibe, don't you think? Where never is heard a discouraging word. And everything is Trumpy all day. There's that, and then there's a little something that News Ninja Gene brought to my attention. I guess you could say that Anthrax Coulter, now in the autumn of her popularity, is thirsty for attention. And she recently, in a desperate attempt to remain relevant, declared that we should have a national compromise on the issue of abortion. Anthrax Coulter says now that abortion should be banned in the United States, dot, dot, dot. But only for Republican women.
Yeah.
I mean, that would... How very terribly edgy of her. And note coming in from Karen. Hey, Karen. Oh, well, okay, let me back up. John in Central PA says, Taurus? And that's a Taurus? My brother's a Taurus. To that I say, yikes. How about that, you know? Not so little Aquarius girl, besties with a Taurus girl. Seems to work. Until I cross her. But Karen, Subject line, Wednesday's podcast. I just caught up with your podcast from Wednesday. Thank you for covering the story of our election administrator, Mr. Garcia. He ran the most convenient, efficient, and verifiable paper trails election system, and the GOP just can't have that. This is, I think, Tarrant County, Texas. Hyder Garcia. It's going to be chaos in 24. I sat in on the public meeting last year when there were calls for his removal. Sorry, pollen. Karen says, I sat in on the public meeting last year when there were calls for his removal. I listened to some of these crazy, and it's Russian disinformation silliness. He even ran a mock election demonstration so these people could come in and run the machines themselves. Naturally, none of them showed up. That's rigged! Last November, our county held all our Democratic seats and gained a state legislature seat. Greg Abbott was elected with only 30% of the vote. Beto got 26. 52% of registered voters didn't show up. The talk before the election was all on the poll watchers. I volunteer for the Democratic Party here, and while talking, good on you, Karen. Good on you. Please accept my heartfelt thanks. I volunteer for the Democratic Party here, and while talking with voters, mostly minority voters, were hesitant to show. One even told me he didn't want any trouble. That's what's going on here. After the November election, the new county judge and our black-hatted sheriff were shown on the news with their new voter fraud task force, even though no fraud exists. See the point? Some people blame gerrymandering for our state being this way. I blame the removal of preclearance by the crooked Supremes. I think both things can be true at the same time, Karen. The GOP only wants their voters to vote, and they're highly organized with all the evangelical churches on every corner doing all kinds of politicking. The state legislature this year is busy stripping power away from blue urban areas by taking away power to protect workers and residents. They're forming a new court for big business that will be run by judges who are appointed by the governor every 2 years. Our property taxes are ridiculous, and they want to take that money and give it to private, religious, and charter schools through vouchers. We might not be able to afford to retire here. Our sons can't afford to rent here. I told my sons not to raise families here with the crazy abortion law. My gynecologist quit, and I don't blame her, but what am I going to do? And why don't they leave trans people alone? They don't sexualize the children. Hooters Restaurant does. Oh, Karen. That's the first cowbell of the evening. A Hooters Restaurant and the WWE, while we're at it, with their scantily clad men with their faces in each other's crotches. You said that the New York Times covered this story? Our local news hardly made a peep. They're worthless, only covering stories that make the public schools look bad and the governor look good. So thank you again for mentioning it on your show. I love your show, and I'll spread the good word about it. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Karen. Thank you so very much. And thanks for giving a damn. Thanks for being active in the face of brutal opposition. And thanks for telling the truth about the reality of living in Texas. You know, one of the things I really want to do, because I haven't yet, our youngest daughter lives in New Mexico. And I want to go a-visiting. But I'm not crazy about flying. I like driving. I like actually seeing other parts of the country. But honestly, I don't know if I can be safe doing it. And I frankly, even though there are vast spaces of just driving and driving and driving and driving, I always thought it would be cool to drive across Texas. I don't know if it's safe for me to do that now. I guess I could go across I-70 and all the way across Kansas and into Colorado and turn left and go down into New Mexico. New Mexico is decently blue and decent for trans people. Colorado is downright welcoming, you know, except for the fact that nobody can afford to live there, at least nobody like me. God, we'd have to run the evening fundraising goal up to $500 a night or more just to make, you know, rent on a Cracker Box Palace apartment. But, well, that would still mean crossing Missouri. I started college in Missouri. That's what this all this madness made, that's what it does to me, my thoughts. I haven't been back to the first college I went to since I left there in 1983. I've always dreamed of doing so. I'd like to see Fulton again. It's a charming little town. I'd like to go back to the Winston Churchill Memorial in the United States at the rebuilt Church of St. Mary Aldermanbury, a Christopher Wren design. And, oh, it's beautiful, and it sits right there on the freshman quad. The chimes start at 6 o'clock in the morning. No sleeping in for the freshmen. But you can hear them all over campus, too, for that matter. But I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can. And frankly, if you were to ask a Missouri Republican, well, hell, we don't want you coming through here. So, yeah. But as Darlene in Connecticut says, cool, a really good Karen, LOL. Yeah, Karen is an awesome Karen. We've got two awesome Karens in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Karen in Texas, and we got Karen in Georgistan. Cool blue red state Karens. I like that. Thank you so much for your observations, Karen. Thank you. And by the way, Stephen, New York, $23 challenge. So that means there are $48 in challenges on the table. $23 challenge 4 years ago was among the darkest days of my life, Steve said. I had to put down my dear Petunia Jane. She was just 8 years old and weighed 5 pounds, 7 ounces, but she was 2,000 pounds of love. I still sob, not cry, when I think about her. And Petunia Jane was a beautiful little calico. Steve, I'm sorry, but thank you for the challenge. So in Petunia Jane's memory, there's $23. It can be doubled to $46. Thank you, Steve. Emilio, don't make fun of my Latin. Et tu mirabile dictu, clatu barata nicto. Oh, clatu, clatu, clatu. As to Taurus, Steve from Georgistan says, don't mistake our kindness for weakness. Never, never. Randy Radar says, I notice you only get serious about the fundraising when the fundraising goal reaches $1,750. What? Randy, I'm here banging on it every day, day in and day out. I don't like for it to reach $1,750. We've been north of $2,000. That freaks me right out. Crossing the $1,000 barrier drives me bananas. I wish we could just raise the regular goal every night, but no, I don't think it's fair to say that I only get serious about it when it reaches $1,750. It's just that there's reason. I know y'all get sick of hearing about fundraising. And I hate interrupting the program every 15, 20, 30 minutes to talk about fundraising. Because it interrupts not only the flow of the program, but my train of thought. I don't know how to respond to that. As to Sheriff Michael Chitwood down in Volusia County, Florida, Clarence says, those Nazi creeps picked the wrong person to start some shit. Sheriff Chitwood is the son of Mike Sr. He's a legendary veteran of the Philadelphia Police Department. Chitwood Sr. went up the ranks in the department with a no-nonsense policing policy. He was equal opportunity when it came to issuing out justice. Anyone who encountered Chitwood knew to fall in line real quick. The reputation of Chitwood Sr. is right up there with Frank Rizzo, maybe not quite as racist. Anyway, those Nazi fools are in for a rude awakening. The Chitwood clan is no snowflake entity. Well, anybody who wants to beat the asses of Nazis is welcome to stand to and stand not on the order of their Nazi ass beating, but Nazi ass beat at once. Thank you, Clarence. I didn't know that. And Lee in New York adding his birthday wishes to everyone else's for the lovely Annette. Ralph says, I'm a Taurus too. Oh dear, there's three of them. Four counting John and PA's brother. Lee in New York says, as to Ann Coulter, I still like Keith Olbermann's nickname for her, Coultergeist. That's good. I'm partial to anthrax just because I think I came up with that one. I don't recall stealing it from anywhere. And Theo says, electoral dysfunction. Electile dysfunction. Ah, okay. Kind of a leisurely cowbell there, not the llama running down the mountain. Oregon State's vote-by-mail system is well-designed, has excellent record-keeping, and has been promoted as a national model until the 2022 primaries anyway. The chair of our county board of commissioners, one Tootie Smith, was responsible for proof-checking the barcodes on the ballots. She got around to it the day before they were to be sent off for printing, which is when she discovered that they bore no relation to the graphics which the computer scanners could read. But she sent them off anyway, thus befuddling the system and costing a technical term, butt-ton of money and time for manual processing. Maybe this is unfair of me to say. I've known of politicians, men, whose names were Hootie, and now you're telling me about an election supervisor named Tootie. Maybe this is just bias on my part, but maybe we don't trust governmental functions to people whose names are Hootie and Tootie. Because it sounds like a new cartoon series from, I don't know, Mike Judge or something. Hey, George in Coarse Gold, thank you very kindly. Ralph's challenge, the three alarm fire alarm challenge is met with happy birthday wishes going to Annette from George in Coarse Gold. Thank you, George. Thank you so much. So that means we're down to 1650. And if someone will respond to Steve's Petunia Jane challenge, in memory of Petunia Jane challenge, we'll get down to 1604. Thank you, George. Thank you. Lo and behold, I have Phil Robstered into the second hour of the program, and it is, by all rights, we should have already been in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler elves if the folks over already in the tree could be so kind as to connect. That would be great. Pretty please. Saves me having to type connect please in the meanwhile, subject line, killing it in the Florida Keys. Yeah, you just have to. Why can't that be in a civilized state? It's so beautiful. Palm trees, the blue waters, the Gulf Stream, the Caribbean, I'm not sure entirely which. But I guess Scary Jerry is down in the Keys. I totally get the Florida hate, Scary Jerry says. I've had multiple political epiphanies since I've been here and actually had to be in a truck island hopping, smiling, listening, unfortunately, to Fox News. I stood up for trans people and decided terabytes of hateful propaganda in like 5 seconds. I blame you for that. Do blame me. Don't write off the Keys. They like rainbow money just fine. They're respectful of even the irreverent. Conk Republic forever. I'm placing a magic spell on the show, by the way. $1,700 ain't no joke. Hornistas, unite and bring your Soros money checks. Peace, love, unity, and respect. Scary Jerry. Oh, there's video, too. Oh, yeah, there's video, too. I can feel the sunburn already, Scary Jerry. Not a cloud in the sky. I went to the Keys once. We stayed at a Hampton Inn. Got down there, and I wanted me some key lime pie. I asked the waiter for key lime pie, and he said, no key lime pie. I said, okay, peach will do. No peach pie. It was a fairly new Embassy Suites hotel. I said, and it had a restaurant in it. This was a long time ago. I said, okay, apples. No pie! He barked at me. And the person I was with said, huh, he's hostile. At which point we named the Embassy Suites in Key West the Hostel Hostel. And Embassy Suites have been the Hostel Hostel forever since. Non sequitur contrarian, Stephen New York says, often you say that democracy in the United States is aspirational and not operational. Are there some other places you think are democracies? Check out the website. Oh, no, that's Steve's website. Never mind. They seem to take the idea to heart in Iceland. Maybe Switzerland? I mean, we're not talking about mob rule democracies. That went the way of the Sarissa once the Spartans got done with the Athenians, because the Athenians got all froggy and started a war. That would be your Peloponnesian War there. But pure mob... There are even, to be quite fair, there are even manifestations of democracy break out in the United States every now and then. Up in those tiny little New England states, people get together and make democratic decisions about which potholes to fill in what order. And back at the time of the framing of the Constitution, there was some discussion among the framers that the bigger the state, the less likely it was to engage in democracy. So... I don't know, Steve. I don't know. John in southern Minnesota, correction on Tootie. The person who messed up the barcodes was County Clerk Sherry Hall. She defended her work even though she messed up, was an incumbent, and was soundly defeated in the election in 2022. Tootie Smith is a Clackamas County, Oregon commissioner and a right-wing waste of time. I have family members that live there. Now back to the passive-aggressive weather here in Minnesota. Passive-aggressive weather. That's yeah, where you can have four seasons, not in a week, but in a day, this time of year. Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Forecast for blizzard in the afternoon. Or so my Minnesota friends tell me. Tanning by computer video. Lee in New York says, okay. Robin, are you whitest or just transparent? Ha, 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 both. Remember, I have to put on SPF, oh my God, to reach under the refrigerator bulb to pull out the bologna and the cheese for a bologna and cheese sandwich. Yeah. Well, let's run over to the old holler tree and see what's going on with the denizens thereof. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
Got me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, because I just had to unmute.
Yeah, you're good.
Oh, I've got to experience the rite of spring today.
Yard work?
No.
What happened?
The 102nd running of the Red Bluff Roundup.
Oh. That road. Yeah, I remember when we were talking about that back during the pandemic. And they were going to have a rodeo, hell or high water. Is that the one?
Yeah, but I don't think they had one.
Oh.
Their count got messed up.
Did that, what's his name? His last name's Fox, that weirdo Jesus freak. Did he hold a concert or vaccine protest or something up there? My memory seems to have.
He might have. I mean, he had the big event at the Sundial Bridge a year or two ago. His church is up there and ready.
Oh, is it? Okay. So was the Red Bluff Roundup well attended?
Well, I don't know. All I know is we hear the sound of jets flying low, screeching over the top of my house. I know that the Roundup's going on.
They're chasing cattle with jets now?
No, they do a flyby every year for all 3 days.
I get it. That was an attempt at humor, Sparky. Dude. Jeez.
It's on Rodeo TV or something like that, too, also.
Because there's something out there called Rodeo TV.
Yeah, there is. It's something like that. I forget what it exactly is.
Fuck it, I'm moving to Mars, too.
Hey, Sparky.
What?
Is it RFD? There's a cable channel called RFD, which specializes in rural programming. Now, that sounds like the perfect place for a rodeo.
I doubt it. It's probably streamed online somewhere. A lot of events are streamed now. I mean, you can...
That's true.
You can get all kinds of things. There's all multi different...
I have no doubt that there's a streaming platform for watching paint dry.
There could be. I don't know.
Because there's going to if there, it's like that old Bible verse, wherever two or more are gathered in my name, we will sell commercials.
Yeah, well, if Amazon can stream NFL football games now, anything's possible. And YouTube TV is doing the NFL pass, the Sunday pass thing.
Yeah.
Direct TV used to do.
Yeah, and it's $100.
I think it's $149 or something like that.
Yeah, sorry, no.
I've seen that advertised. I don't need it. I mean, I know websites where I can watch any game I want on Sunday. They're all from Europe.
Yeah, you've got those secret squirrel URLs.
Yeah, that's when it's good to have a VPN.
Very true.
I don't want to get popped again.
Let's don't and say you didn't.
I got in trouble for downloading movies once. Remember the site Pirate Bay?
Oh, very much so, yes.
I remember when you said you got found out.
Yeah. I told that story years ago.
Yeah. So I don't know where to go now when I want to see movies that I can't see. I never did.
Oh, I can send you some links, Jack.
Yeah. I don't, well, I probably wouldn't do it anyway, but because of virus or what, I don't think I ever really downloaded any kind of a movie from there. But,
well, they're streaming on these sites that I know about.
Oh,
They're like, you know that movie 80 for Brady?
I've heard of it.
Well, it's on Paramount Network. You know, I was bored the other day and I watched it.
Paramount Plus?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Oh, it was kind of corny, but they were funny. The four women were funny.
Oh, yeah. It's like Jane, was that like Jane Fonda who's that?
Sally Field.
And the one from Lily Tomlin.
And then Rita Moreno.
Okay.
Rita Moreno is 90 years old.
Wow. Huh.
Jane Fonda's in her 80s.
Oh, man.
Sally Field's the youngest at 75, according to the in the movie.
Because I always think of her in that Trans Am or with the nun thing on her head.
When you say in that Trans Am, you are, of course, referring to Smokey and the Bandit.
Of course.
Well, there are younger people in this community who have never even heard Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even know it. They were smuggling Coors beer.
And I swear, I still want to do a remake, only it'll be smuggling Nuglara Spotted Cow beer from Wisconsin to Georgia.
That's just a funny name. Funny name, isn't it?
Oh, Spotted Cow?
Yeah.
That's back in my beer drinking days, that was one of my favorite utility beers of all time. They finish it with corn grits, and it just has this delightful, tart little kick at the end.
Yeah. So who would be the truck drivers in your remake?
Oh, so I think I was mentioning him earlier. I think he has a film career ahead of him. Jason Isbell could play the Jerry Reed role.
Okay.
And, I don't know, maybe Ryan Reynolds in the Burt Reynolds role?
He'd be good.
Yeah.
You know, the hard roles to cast in a remake?
Jackie Gleason.
Well, Pat McCormick and Paul Williams, Big Enos and Little Enos, I think their name was.
Yeah.
And yes, yeah. Jackie Gleason, who actually carried that picture off. I mean, he was the star of the show. Bert, as good as he was not quite up to Jackie Gleason's as.
Yeah, but we're not talking about the old movie, Scott. We want to make a remake. So who are you going to put in the remake?
That's the whole point. It's going to be hard to find somebody to do the Jackie Gleason.
Who is that guy?
I got somebody, Brad Garrett, for the Jackie Gleason role.
Hey, yeah, okay. Okay, hey, Tracy, yeah, that's Brad Garrett would be good.
Or John Goodman.
Oh, John Goodman.
Yeah.
And then Brad Garrett as Big Enos.
Okay, yeah.
Now we need a little Enos. Damn, we've got this thing. Wait, we don't have a Sally Fields character yet.
Oh, well, let's see. Jennifer Garner.
Man, I've been loving,
Tracy, are you in a car wash?
Making all that noise. Is that you, Jack?
No.
No, I'm not. It's not me. Oh, you know, it might be my air conditioner because it's actually like 90 degrees right now, which it hasn't been this hot since December.
Yeah, it's your air conditioner.
Yeah.
Well, I just turned it off. So if I smother, it's for, you know.
Yeah, it's for the good of the program. Oh, no, who am I thinking of? Jennifer Lawrence.
Right. Jennifer Lawrence would be good.
That's a good one. I was thinking of Amy Adams.
Amy Adams would be good.
Margot Robbie, that's who I was thinking of. That's Harley Quinn, and she's Barbie. She might be a little too young, you know.
She's not that young.
She has like great facial expressions. I just got around to watching Suicide Squad, you know, like a few weeks ago on regular TV. And so I don't know if that, you know, I guess that's a few years old.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got it cast. We need to work up a treatment. We pretty much got the treatment. It's the remake of Smokey and the Bandit, only they're going from Wisconsin to Georgia.
Yeah, but they got to leave Georgia to get to Wisconsin to get the beer.
Right. Yes. And it's real world because you can't ship any New Glarus beer out of Wisconsin.
Oh, hey, for little Enos.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not the same stature, but. Don Cheadle. He has comic comedic chops, and it's not like he's a really tall man. I mean, he's not, you know, he's nowhere near as short.
Yeah,
he's
but he's
hilarious. But he's what?
He's pretty old.
You'd have to young him up.
He's pretty old. Well, Paul, how old was Paul? Is like, what you think Paul Williams was? How old was he? Oh, you know what? Even as much as he annoys me, Kevin Hart then.
Oh, he does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's and he is a hobbit.
Yeah, he's a hobbit. He's
yeah, but I thought they were supposed to be rednecks.
Well, he can be like, well,
it's a reboot, so we're gonna have some diversity.
We gotta get some diversity, y'all. Come on now. You can't have an entirely white cast.
I mean, okay, what's the event? What are Big Enos and Little Enos buying the beer for?
The Coca-Cola 600. At Road Atlanta.
Have a race at Road Atlanta yet.
Or it could be for the Georgia Florida football game. The world's largest. It's already known as the world's largest cocktail party anyway. But see, the neat thing is you've got all of this movie making. You've got all this movie making infrastructure
or
in
a
Georgia.
A national championship.
Yeah, that would work.
Would you have to?
I think they held one at the stadium there in Georgia.
Yeah, the Mercedes.
Not long ago.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Tracy?
I said like the one that we just had a few months back when who got their asses handed to them, Texas or whoever,
got their asses handed to them against Georgia.
Oh, no, that was – don't bring that up. That makes Joy in Ann Arbor cry. That was TCU.
I'm sorry.
It was TCU. The Horned Frogs.
Would you have to recast the car? Because they wouldn't be driving a Trans Am. What would they be driving in today's world?
Dodge Challenger.
One of the new Dodge Challenger.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, what is it? The Challenger Hellcat?
We all had the same idea.
Yeah, the Hellcat.
Of course.
600 cubic inch V8 engine? Or is it a V12?
I don't know what it is.
So, have we missed anything yet? I think we've got the whole thing cast.
So how did this get started, you know, for us, for me who just got here? How did this conversation about, doing a remake of Smokey and the Bandit get started?
Well, somebody mentioned Smokey and the Bandit, and I said I want to do a remake because...
Don't mention Sally Field.
Yeah, it started with Sally Field being the youngest member of the cast.
Great. 80 for Brady.
Right.
Have you heard about that movie, Tracy?
Yeah, I watched it. I was looking
for... Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jed and I watched it a couple of weeks back on Paramount Plus. And I'm just glad that I didn't spend the
money. No spoilers. Don't even mention the ending.
Nope. It was just... Yeah, because, I look at Rita Moreno, who's... I just want Jane Fonda... At this point, she's addicted to plastic surgery.
Oh, now that's not fair.
Oh, no. She's a beautiful woman. I'm looking at, Rita Moreno. I'm looking at Sally Field. I mean, if Rita Moreno has some work, if she's had work done, it's damn good work. You can't tell. And I don't think Sally Field... But, because it's just one of those things, because of how women... are forced to believe that they have to look a certain way, it just can't be healthy. All those surgeries, you're supposed to age, at some point. I don't know. Today.
You're talking to the wrong girl, Tracy.
Well, you know what I mean, Robin. I'm talking about somebody who is already stunningly beautiful. And she's gotten to that point where it just scares me when people do all this plastic surgery and they become unrecognizable. And at her age, it can't be healthy.
Are you kidding? I'm gonna get my face lifted so tight that when I raise my eyebrows, my pantyhose come up.
You're stupid. But this is you don't. Okay.
Tracy, I know a woman the same age as me that is just as beautiful.
Right.
As you?
No, as a beautiful woman.
Right. It's like, I just still, your situation.
I went to high school with her. She's a good friend of mine. She's the one that has a house on the lake.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. But your situation is entirely different, sweetie, sister, and that's the thing. But it's like you said.
I'm 71 years old.
No, she's talking to me, Sparky.
Robin. No, I'm talking to Robin. It's entirely...
Okay, I'll butt out.
No.
It's not butt out. It's just, she was not suggesting that you would get plastic surgery. Or even need it.
Well, like today, I went to this restaurant, and they specialize for pozole.
Oh, God, you just had to do that, didn't you, Pozzoli? You know how I feel about that.
Well, and there was all these beautiful Mexican women who had all, Mexican women, women of color, we don't need collagen in our lips because typically our lips are full, right? But I could tell that they had, I could spot collagen, a collagen treatment a mile away. But when I know, and it didn't look, they didn't need it. But because of the European, actually full lips are black people thing. But now that it's popular to get full lips, just when I was looking at it, I was just like, I mean, they had implants. they even had booties, and I'm like, I can say, I can tell a fake booty, y'all.
Well, see, but that's not booty. That's not a European beauty standard.
No.
And it's not even an African American beauty standard. What that is, there is a cultural there's a cultural phenomenon in Mexico, and it's been publicized like in the telenovelas and whatnot. But it's a beauty standard that's based upon the wives and girlfriends of the heads of the cartels. Because they get a kind of a rock star vibe.
Yeah. I guess
and that's and it's huge. Do you remember the woman that got killed a couple of months back by the cartels?
Yep.
Yeah, she was on her way to get her butt done.
Right, that's this whole thing. I mean, I know it's a terrible thing to suffer from no ass and all disease. But I guess because it's just so crazy that when I was younger and when I was, you know, in school, you know, going to a white school, I got harassed on the regular because of my behind, and now women are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the ass that I was just born with. That part.
By the way, Matt writes in, subject line, Jane Fonda. Matt says she's spoken about her plastic surgery and succumbing to the misogynistic industry standards. She stated if she had to do it over again, she wouldn't have done it. But, however, right. She has said that due to the industry she's in and wanting to get back into it after her marriage to Ted Turner, she felt like she needed to go under the knife in order to get roles. I don't think she's wrong about that. She's not.
No, that was my point. The fact that she had to do this to herself in order to get roles and not be cast as the grandma or what have you. But how old is Jane Fonda? Isn't she 80?
Every bit.
Okay. You know, because the only thing I think about when I see, like, Jane Fonda and stuff like that, I just think of, you know, I think of Joan Rivers.
Yeah, dying for
it. And how she's dying for it. And that's my concern. When I say these things, it's out of concern because I love Jane Fonda. You know, she's, you know, I have a friend, one of my former classmates, she dog sat and house sat for us when Jan and I went to Vegas. And sweet girl, white girl. And she, you know, double major, she was a double major in anthropology and Africana studies. And she comes from a Trump family, right? And she never even told her family what her major was. But as soon as they found out, they kicked her out of the house. Okay.
Jesus.
This is before I knew her, because had I known about that, I would immediately have had her move in with me without issue, right? But she said before that happened, whenever they were watching something and Jane Fonda was in it, and as soon as Jane Fonda came on the screen, they changed the channel and they
Hanoi Jane.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. I'm like, oh, God, let it go, y'all. Let it go. It's like, can we move on?
No. We can't move on. We can't move on. And it's not we can't move on. They can't move on.
It's like, let it, you know. I need some, what is that movie that they sing Let It Go?
Oh, Frozen.
Oh, the Disney one, right?
Frozen, yeah. Hey, Christopher.
Hi.
Hey, Christopher. How's Inga?
Happy. Hanging in there. She's still with us. She's still amongst the living.
Oh.
Yeah, she's got bone marrow cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thanks, Robin. But she's hanging in there. Thanks, Tracy. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm a fur mommy. I got fur babies now, so.
Well, and it's like the $23 challenge that Steve in New York put on the table in memory of his beloved Petunia Jane. He said, you know, I don't bawl anymore, but I still sob. And He said, 4 years ago was among the darkest days of my life. She was just 8 years old when I had to put her down and weighed 5 pounds, 7 ounces, but she was 2,000 pounds of love.
That's too young.
Yeah. So,
she'll be set, let's see.
We could get down to 1604 if somebody wants to jump in on that $23 challenge. So
we'll be down for 25, Robin.
All right. Well, thank you, Christopher. Thank you. So Steve's challenge is Matt. Thank you, Steve. And your Petunia Jane is remembered with all the love that you had for her. So that gets us out down to 1602. We're working our way down. It'd be great if we could get if somehow because we're working on a bona fide Friday on the front porch community made miracle.
Miracle.
And so at 1602, if we could clear that, it would be fantastic. I don't know if we can. But if
Robin, it's a lot harder for you being in the well with your high heels on.
Thank you for the sympathy. I do appreciate it, Christopher, and hold on. Because it's true. The struggle is real. And that reminds me, Lee in New York, with all the plastic surgery conversations, Lee in New York, subject line, plastic surgery. No judgment from me, Lee says, but I have to return to a classic horn line, .. Them fake boobs.
That is a classic.
And
line.
Do you realize next month will be 2 years since Dem's fake boobs?
I'm missing the joke. What is Dem's fake?
You remember this. You remember this. I'd gone to get my blood work done over in Beckley. And I was standing there waiting to be called back, and the phone rang, and it was Nat. And I didn't want to take the call standing there in the middle of the lab. So I sashayed back out, and there was some overflow seating. And there was this really, really, really old, really, really, really West Virginia couple sitting out there.
Oh, Jesus.
And as I went sashaying past, and believe you me, I sashay, I heard the old lady lean over to the old man, and in a stage whisper that could have been that could be heard on Norblap 9, she said, "Them's fake boobs."
No, I don't remember that.
And that's when I turned around and said, "I beg your pardon." And then I dropped my voice and I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, they are, but I'm working on growing my own as fast as I can."
I don't remember that because I would have remembered that. You never told me that. Oh, my God.
And then I walked outside and finished the call. I mean, this thing had took on a life of its own that night. I don't remember exactly when it was, but Matt in San Francisco played a significant role in it. But I went outside. I called Annette. I was freaking out a little bit because I'm way early in transition. I mean, I'd only been out to the horn community for 5 months, 4 months and change.
Oh, damn.
And I was bugging a little bit. And she said, "Calm down. She wasn't clocking you." And I said, "What?" And she said, "No. She caught her skeevy old man staring at your chest."
Ah.
And There was complete agreement in the Horn Family Community Congregation that evening. And then Matt in San Francisco wrote in and said, "It's not the same, but when I do drag, I have the same problem, Robin, for I am a..." And then he made me scroll, SLW, suspiciously large woman. And that's big. And SLW has become a part of horn lore ever since that day, to the point that later on, when I did the big barbecue for my first pride at Maggie's and gave barbecue and fried fish and Kaneka sausage sandwiches and everything away, Joey showed up with Giraffrey and brought me a little pink, like one of those pink license plates you put on the back of the kid's bicycle. And it was a pink plate, and in big bold letters in blue, it said SLW, and in white underneath it, it said suspiciously large woman.
Classic.
The things you miss when you don't listen every day.
Yeah, me too. That'll be something that by the time I see it somewhere again, I will have forgotten what it meant and would trying to, you know, throw, you know, W like usually is white, S on a slutty or single.
Oh,
or something. I'll never remember, you know, what it is.
Hey, Robin.
Yes, Scott.
I want to touch back on something that you brought up in the Filler Robster, if it's okay.
Do please.
You were contemplating the dynamics, the conversational dynamics around the big conference table at the Supreme Court nowadays. And it made me think of not too long ago how it used to be done. And what came to mind was a film that I think was on HBO a few years ago, Muhammad Ali's Greatest Fight. It was from the point of view of a Supreme Court clerk who was clerking for, I forget which justice, when that case came before the court, Ali's thing over the draft. You remember that?
I do.
But anyway, that film was like 8-9 years ago, something like that. And it was depicting an earlier time. But the contrast between what goes on around the old Supreme Court conference table in today's world versus even that recently ago, you know, is like night and day. And if you've never seen that, I think it's still available, like on HBO. I think it was originally on HBO. And it's a very good movie, you know. But anyway, that's the comment on the Supreme Court, the way that they do business. I had a quick TV viewing tip, if you're ready for it.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
And I've been looking forward to this since I saw the first promo a couple of months ago. It premieres on May 1st, and it runs for about 7 or 8 episodes, White House Plumbers. Have you heard about this?
I'm looking forward to that, Scott.
Oh, God damn. It's basically the behind the scenes of the Watergate scandal from E. Howard Hunt, G. Gordon Liddy's point of view. In other words, what they were up to in the plan.
I'm glad you're mentioning that because I'm waiting for May 1st.
What's happening May 1st besides that?
Well, no, May 1st, the premiere of the White House Plumbers.
Oh, okay. I thought there was something else going on.
No, that's when it comes on.
Woody
Harrelson as E. Howard Hunt is bound to be gold.
Well, he and the guy who plays Liddy were on with Colbert the other night. If you get a chance, if that's anywhere to be streamed on demand, I'm sure it's going to be a rollicking good show between the two of them. I forget the other guy's name. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Oh, I love the trailer. What comes across the screen, the fonting. None of the names have been changed to protect the innocent, because there weren't any. They were practically all found guilty in court. And that one line that E. Howard Hunt's wife says, "Oh, Howard, that's the craziest idea I've ever heard."
Oh yeah, Dorothy Hunt. God damn, that was a weird thing. She how much money did she have with her on that plane that went down? I think it was a United flight going into.
No, it was insane. Why are you shredding money?
Well, I think this White House Plumbers is going to be the equal of that show that was on about 6 months ago about Martha Mitchell. What was that series?
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be as good or better than that. That's my prediction. Got my Gene and Roger hat.
He says he's got the wrong tools. God damn!
Have you guys heard this thing about, speaking of Woody Harrelson, about him and Matthew McConaughey possibly having the same dad?
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
I mean, I read the article and I was like, what?
As a matter of fact, the guy, you know, the father who was a hitman, serial killer, or whatever, my former friend that grew up in Texas, he knew that whole family. He knows Woody Harrelson. Because I think they're from the same, not far from each other and all that. And so when he told me that story, this is long before Matthew McConaughey entered the picture. And so when I saw that, and they're like, so they're gonna do a DNA test. But the crazy thing is, they're friends. They're like brothers anyway. They've been friends for
years. Yeah, it's like that movie with Will Ferrell and
Step Brothers.
Yes.
Okay.
It's real life. Okay, so we've got some breaking news. And by the way, thank you, Ralphs. We're down to $1,600. We got $1,600 to go to finish, you know, to be funded for this week. That's $100 of last Friday, and then all of this week is unfunded. And Randy Radar pointed out, PBS is incessant with their fundraising. And they're still on the air. So here we are, $1,600 to go. And if we could finish Fridays, that would be great. And God knows, dare to dream, a Horn family community made miracle and get this week funded and get Appalachian Power off my back. And a couple of other bills. That would be wonderful. But no, we have breaking news. Stand by.
Seven to 2 vote.
On what? On the pill?
The Supreme Court.
Keeping the pill going.
Keeping the pill going? What?
Yes. Yes.
Holy shit.
The Washington Post, I mean, this is their direct copy. The Supreme Court on Friday retained full access for now to a key drug that has been taken by millions of women to terminate early pregnancies, its first major abortion-related decision since overturning Roe v. Wade. But this, hold on, I mean, let's not pop the champagne, okay?
All right.
I'm waiting. So here's the other shoe.
There's not really another shoe. It's just that this is a procedural decision to let stand a lower court ruling that said, no, Matthew Kaczmarek, you lying sack of shit. By the way, he is a lying sack of shit because it turns out that when he was being confirmed as a maggot federal judge, he hid public pronouncements that he had made about abortion. He failed, where have we heard this from, before? He failed to disclose that to the Senate of the United States. Because he knew that it would probably tank him.
He is
a lying dog. But anyway, it's just a procedural vote. They're saying they're going to let the drug continue to be used pending a full ruling by the court. Now, we both know who the two no votes were. I don't even have to see to know. Anybody?
Thomas, Uncle Thomas.
Yeah, Fappy Thomas. And Sammy Bad Breath.
Sammy Bad Breath.
So what they're going to do, so that means Brat and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch and the Handmaid and Old Balls and Strikes all said, no, let's not get crazy here. Let's wait and develop the full case, develop a full record, and then fuck them. This is the Supreme Court version of that old joke about the two bulls on the hill. An old bull and a young bull. And the young bull looks, it's the morning, and, you know, they're out in the pasture, and the young bull looks at the old bull and says, "Hey, Pop, let's go down the hill and fuck one." "No, let's run down the hill and fuck one." And the old bull says, "No, son, let's walk down the hill and fuck them all." This is that, okay?
But, you know, when...
Because they don't want people in the streets any more often than they have to.
Right. We saw on that last one, when the ruling slipped out, you know, or somebody leaked it, that was when Roberts was pissed off. Well, he wanted to, you know, make another incremental thing so people didn't get pissed off all of a sudden. You know, and then, you know, he'd do it, you know, add another increment later.
Right.
That's why he was pissed off. He wasn't pissed off about the result. He was pissed off because it was enough to get people in the streets.
And he was, yeah, because he, old balls and strikes, Jack, and thank you, Jack, for jumping in. I do appreciate it. We're down now to 1570. Miracles happen as they happen. By fits and starts. Thank you, Jack, so much. Old Balls and Strikes is a serious Republican. And he knew what the leak of the Dobbs decision would do. And he knew that it would have an impact on the 2020 or 2022 election. And he wanted to see a bug spray, crazy, hog-ass, wild Congress to accomplish some of his basic Republican goals. And so when Sammy Bad Breath and or Fappy Thomas leaked the opinion to harden the the cooperation of the Handmaid and Brat and Neil Gorsuch, old Balls and Strikes knew exactly what the outcome would be. And it pissed him off. And then he had to go to the trouble of dummying up an investigation to show that he had no idea who leaked it.
Gambling in this establishment?
I am shocked. Shocked.
I'm shocked.
So, and then we got another problem. I don't know if y'all noticed this one. I am fully supportive of the idea. Not a Californian, so not really. Well, no, it's the Senate. It's my business. DiFi should have not run the last time.
Yeah.
God.
But the number that is being run on her is kind of gross. Because, you know, Moscow Mitch was out for a while and nobody was hollering for him to resign. On our side, John Fetterman checked himself into Bethesda for mental health care and nobody screamed that he should resign.
Well, some on the right did.
Well, I mean, they're assholes.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously.
But, you know, there were no Republicans hollering for Moscow Mitch to resign. There were no Democrats hollering for John Fetterman to resign.
No.
Well, people want Feinstein's seat.
But...
Well, they want the judges. That's the...
No, yeah, that, I mean, and that's the holdup. The
judges.
Hey, Roger. That's the problem here. She probably should resign, but it does it, it. She should be able to leave with dignity. And the you know the poor woman is not out of the Senate because she's okay. She's not. I have sympathy. My father suffered and had lifelong lasting damage from shingles, and that woman has shingles. Now, there's an argument to be made. Diane, honey, you got the best health care available on planet Earth. Did you not see any of the commercials with the woman yelling, Frank? And get your shingle shots? Or maybe she couldn't. I don't know.
I got mine.
But the but they're and Nancy Pelosi spoke up and said, man, they're running a number on her. But the fact of the matter is, there's talk now about trying to compel the testimony of the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, and the Senate Judiciary Committee can't do it because she ain't there.
Fuck. Well, there's and also if it, another complicating factor, and that is that if she were to resign, Gavin Newsom would have to appoint a replacement, and whoever the replacement is would then have a leg up. And there are three good Democrats running for that seat. And that would put Gavin Newsom in a vice.
Yeah, it'd put him in a hell of a bind, and he'd have to pick, I'd guess he would pick a fourth.
Well, that's the supposition, is that he would pick somebody to simply be a caretaker who promised not to run for the full term.
Yeah, like Boxer.
Yeah,
yeah, if Babs wanted to go back, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, explain
how about Jerry Brown? Can he could they do Jerry Brown?
Well, that, Jerry Brown would be one, too. But explain something to me, Robin, and I don't understand it. And that is that the leader of the Senate apparently cannot, if she were to resign from the Judiciary Committee, he cannot appoint a replacement unless it is approved by
the entire body,
vote, at least a 60 vote of the Senate. How come the Democratic leader can't appoint another Democrat to the Judiciary Committee without the Republicans fucking with the Democratic Party?
Because the 60 vote cloture rule. It's not, you know, it's not financial. It's not budgetary. So You can't use that excuse, and the filibuster still exists, and consequently, you've got to cross that 60-vote threshold, or you're screwed. And the Republicans have said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. And if the shoe was on the other foot, and if the shoe was on the other foot, the Democrats would go, no, sorry.
Well, now,
I wouldn't be so sure of that, Robin.
The Judiciary Committee normally is 50-50, or is it 51-49? In other words, does the Judiciary Committee have one more Democrat than a Republican, or are there even numbers?
Well, no, that's the problem. The Judiciary Committee is of equal number right now.
Right now, but historically, the party in power, the majority party, has one more seat than the minority party.
And that's DiFi.
Right. You get it? You get it, Roger?
Yeah.
You got a tie now, right?
Let's say if there were 21 seats, the Democrats had 11 and the Republicans had 10.
Right.
And now it's a tie and everything's locked up.
Right.
Correct.
Because of the obstructionist asshole Republicans.
Not even XLAX, not even all the XLAX in the world will help.
No, I mean, this is a Judiciary Committee that's gone vapor lock.
Exactly.
Man, now that we've put that one sort of to bed, I'm going to post something in the chat room.
That's why everybody's fucking pissed off. And yes.
But I don't know that we put it to bed, Roger. The problem here is that is one of, you know, what's the right thing to do? Now, we've had stories for years, at least a couple, that DiFi is kind of dotty.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was a political shiv job by people who wanted her job. But there seems to be actual credible evidence of her not kind of knowing where she was.
I want to say one of the big papers a year ago published a story about it.
Yeah, they did.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is public knowledge for a year.
It's been public knowledge for quite some time. I was a member of the state Democratic convention, blah, blah, in California until I moved up here to Oregon. And I've been here 5 years. And at the conventions, just back before her last run, there was an effort to, come on, Diane, you know, you've been here since Christ was a kid. It's time to move on. You've done all you can. You got all your retirement. You're married to a rich man. Pass the baton. And she was adamant she didn't want to and was given the deference, okay, one more six-year term and then it'll happen because you'll be too fucking old to even worry about it by then.
And you know what, Roger? That's the way you just put that is reminiscent of, and I know it pisses people off, but with the 2020 vision of hindsight, there were people who were during Barack Obama's term looking at RBG and saying, "You've done great work. Please give him a chance to appoint your successor."
I was just going to say that, Robin. I was just going to bring her up. We've seen this movie before. It's the sequel to RBG. Exactly.
Well,
right.
And then California, with its open primary, the last couple of senatorial elections have been between two Democrats because the two Democrats are the top vote getters in the primary in California. So had she resigned, well, not run, the previous one, it clearly would have been another Democrat. Now, who it would have been, I have no idea because nobody was chomping at the bit to try and primary her because it wouldn't have been possible. The voters of California would have sent her back primarily because of her actions becoming mayor of San Francisco.
Yeah.
When Harvey Milk got shot. So, I mean, she has a very long embedded history with the Democrats of California that were going to put her back in the Senate if she wanted to go, no matter what. And I have a feeling that if she ran again this time, she would get reelected.
Just like the bastard in Iowa.
Yeah, who, by the way, ran to her defense.
Of course. What the fuck is his name again?
Chuck Grassley.
Grassley.
Yeah, he's the guy who ate dinner off of Carol Baker's plate.
Oh, yeah.
At Girls State when she was young.
Oh, that's disgusting. That's so disgusting.
But it's a mess. I mean, let's see. You got Ro Khanna, you got Barbara Lee, you got Katie Porter, and you got Adam Schiff. And
well, they're all good people.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I lean toward Katie, just because I think she's young and she can hold that seat forevermore.
Mm-hmm.
And she will be hell on wheels in the Senate.
And she could school Republicans like hardly anybody else.
Yeah, they probably live in fear of her and her whiteboard.
And their corporate paymasters as well.
Yeah.
She takes them out behind the woodshed.
But the bottom line is, it would be nice to see the Chief Justice subpoenaed. But until and unless... Because, see, this smacks of sexism and it smacks of ageism and ableism. And every last bit of that just grosses me out. On the other hand,
true, but the mechanics remain what they are.
Right.
And that's what's most important. I'm sorry. The fact that we can't.
Yeah, that old Chicago writer, politics ain't beanbag.
Yes. Look at what the power these maggot judges have wielded. These people are atrocious. They're tearing the country apart.
It's horrible.
The last bowl.
And by the way, we have crossed the 7 o'clock in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. We've crossed the third hour boundary of the program. And Jeremy just jumped in. Thank you so much, Jeremy. Jeremy said, in memory of my family dog, Onyx, and the fourth anniversary of my sister's passing, I saw a post today, and I know how much you hurt, Jeremy, and our heart goes out to you. And so we are down to $15.50. Rob in Minnesota. Thank you, Rob. We're now down to $14.50, which just happens to be the frequency of one of the radio stations I worked at, WLAY. I'm not kidding. But they were decent people and never got, and never said, you know, get laid at $14.50. But WLAY was AM 1450 in Sheffield, Muscle Shoals, the Quad Cities. Anyway, thank you, Rob. We are at 1450 to go. A miracle can happen. We've had miracles happen in less time than this. So there's about 45 minutes left in the program. Well, we were talking about Smokey and the Bandit. Long way to go and a short time to get there. Thank you, Rob. Thank you so much. That helps such a great deal. As far as DiFi is concerned, Matt in San Francisco, who will have the skinny, said, there's been talk for some time about her not having all her faculties, basically some type of dementia or memory loss scenario, which is really sad. I think the folks making hay for her to leave are basing it on thinking she's not coming back due to issues far greater than shingles. I just don't want to go so far as to say her capacity to do the job is greatly diminished. With the ability to get things done, coming down to such a narrow margin, it's just critical that everyone be there and able to push things through. I think it's just sad she didn't step aside when she could have done so with all the fanfare that she very much deserves. Now it's basically gone too far and has gotten ugly, which is unfortunate because she's been a decent senator, and prior to that served many roles from San Francisco's supervisor, mayor, etc. It's just an ugly mess. There's something to be said about leaving the party before while you're on top and not staying until it's time to clean up the mess. And that's exactly where California is, and Matt's absolutely right. I mean, we kind of lived a much smaller version of this with the decline of Robert Byrd. And look who replaced him.
Yeah,
you know, the dynamic, once you're there for any good length of time, there's a lot of courage and service element in stepping up. Everybody kind of agrees on that. But once they've been there a while, they forget the part about the service element being present in the stepping down at the proper time. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes,
it is, and I have personally wondered if what Matt posited was exactly the case, that she's got shingles, but if someone laid the healing hands of faith on her and she miraculously recovered from shingles, she still wouldn't be okay. Now, by the same token, let's remember the impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson. Because history nerd girl. Where a member of the United States Senate was brought in on a stretcher to cast the deciding vote that allowed Andrew Johnson to remain president of the United States of America.
Wow.
Well, wasn't there a case like that recently, either in the House or the Senate, where somebody literally also had to be brought in on a stretcher? I'm talking about the last 8 or 10, 12 years.
Well, I mean, Byrd was wheeled in a wheelchair.
Maybe that's the one.
And God,
Obamacare vote?
Maybe. But God knows... Strom Thurmond, whose days of fucking the upstairs help were long past him, came doddering in to do his filthy Republican business.
Talking to the machine.
and McCain was pretty much on his last legs when he did the thumbs down.
Yeah.
Kennedy, he was just barely hanging in there for those last votes, too.
There's Steve.
The lion of the left, yeah. And this Feinstein thing, isn't she preventing progressive judges from being
appointed? Yes, yes, she is.
That's what's got everybody fucking furious.
But now there's more on top of that, Steve, because she's also preventing any meaningful action in terms of any sort of senatorial inquiry into the malfeasance of who may turn out to be the dirtiest man to sit on the Supreme Court since Roger Taney.
Why doesn't she just step down? This doesn't make any sense. And you know, Dick Durbin, he pisses me off too because he's allowing a lot of these judges to be pink slipped.
Blue slip.
Thanks, Chris. I get my colors confused. That goes all the way back to the early days, back when we didn't have all the communications we have now. If there was a judge, you could blue slip them. Mm-hmm. Okay, and whenever there's Democratic is in charge of the judiciary, they reinstate that. But whenever the rethugs are in charge of the judiciary, they say, we're not going to use
that. Yeah, we don't need that anymore.
We don't need that. So we get fucked coming and going, you know?
Steve, there may be a simple answer to the question that you pose. There again, it's the mindset. Once you've been there a while, you have a higher than normal degree of a sense of indispensability. Mm-hmm. You know?
Scott, why does Dick Durbin have the need to feel like he needs to reach across the aisle to these people when if you tried to reach across the aisle to them, they'd slap your hand away, you know?
They cut it off at the
elbow. Cut it off.
Cut it off at their shoulder.
don't ask me to defend or define or describe or explain the machinations of certain politicians.
What is his rationale? You know, it's up to him to decide if they want to do this blue slip thing or not. And he's implemented it again. When Orrin Hatch was in charge of the Judiciary Committee, he said, "No, we're not going to pay any attention."
The Republicans.
Look what Moscow Mitch did.
They never hesitate. The Republicans, but the Democrats need to grow a pair of something. And
Durbin also wrote this letter that I just saw in the news like today about, you know, the ethics and stuff. And has he written that letter knowing that without Feinstein, they can't do anything because the Judiciary Committee is like.
Jack, I think he wrote the letter because writing the letter was the only thing he could do.
Hey, Jack.
I mean, he didn't write, you don't think he wrote it knowing that they wouldn't be like, you know.
No, I think at least for senatorial purposes, I think he's making a record. And I had the quote from Sheldon Whitehouse at the beginning of the program saying that he was glass half full on the idea of making an inquiry, but he was glass half empty on the idea of anything coming of it.
Well, on an intellectual level, can we come to a consensus? Why is Dianne Feinstein doing this? Why is she rat-fucking her own party?
I think Scott said it perfectly.
Even if she resigns, the committee will remain as it is deadlocked because no Republican will allow a replacement to be named.
No, hold on, Roger. Oh,
that's a good point.
Hold on. If she resigns, Gavin Newsom gets to name a replacement.
Exactly.
But will that replacement assume all of her committee positions, or did that have to go through?
No, it does not. That is strictly a caucus matter.
I don't think it does not.
That's a caucus matter.
Oh, that's a caucus matter. Okay.
I want
to go back to what Matt said a minute ago. That the shingles issue is being used as a cover for issues that are deeper.
Yes.
And that being the case, and this is a real mess, and just bear with me, okay? Pretty please. To resign a seat in the Senate or to resign as CEO of Amalgamated Widget requires one thing. A state of mind. The ability to be oriented as to time, place, and manner.
You don't think ego has anything to do with this?
Hold on, Steve.
Okay, all right. You said to be patient. I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize. Go ahead.
It could be that she is so far gone. And again, rank speculation, but if you're going to ask a question like, why won't she just resign?
Get the fuck out. Go.
Yeah, I know. Stand not upon the order if you're going, but go at once. Go. Me and my Shakespeare.
And you kibble from time to time.
Are we talking Ronnie Reagan? Ronnie Reagan gone?
Yeah, gone? We're talking about, you know, doesn't know what day it is, doesn't know who the president is, doesn't know what her own name is, cannot hold a pen to sign a letter of resignation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that is the case, and Matt, you know, you're the expert here, tell me if this makes any sense. But if she can't manifest the requisite state of mind to execute a resignation, you're stuck waiting until she passes away.
Croaks. And that could take forever. Not to be pessimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I realize I'm being a little ray of sunshine here, but
My mom has been in four stage dementia for 20 years, so you know.
Okay, you have some subject matter expertise too, Steve.
Yep.
I wonder if any of the multimillionaires on the talking head shows have actually pondered that idea. You know, usually. Again, out in front of the curve, us, the Horn Family Community Congregation. I'll give it, over the weekend before one of the multimillionaires says, you know, what if she can't manifest the intent and presence of mind to sign a... Yeah. What if the pain from shingles is so bad that the only way to manage it is to wire her up with... Neurontin and handfuls, or probably not even swallow pills. What if the only way to manage it is to just run heavy doses of opioids through an IV? So I mean, I hate where my little mind is taking me right now, but
it could very well be.
Well, we've all seen Weekend at Bernie's.
Could very well be a case of being too far gone to even know. Or acknowledge or recognize how far gone you are.
Yeah, there was a saying. Somebody mentioned old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. There was a saying somebody remarked toward the end of his Roads and Days that there was a certain irony in the fact that the only person on planet Earth who didn't know Ronald Reagan had been president of the United States was Ronald Reagan.
Ronald, that's exactly right.
So true.
And leave it to an old prune like Mitch to glum all over something like this and to hop on and say, well, we got to respect our office of Dianne Feinstein.
You do that way too well.
But did you hear him say that, Robert?
I did. And I was like, yeah, in Kentucky, when somebody breaks a hip, they shoot them on the track, Mitch.
So can someone clear up for me, like, the status quo, where the snapshot of time where we are right now? She did step down from the Judiciary Committee, is my understanding, correct?
Correct.
Now, how do we put another one in? And that's what Moscow Mitch is blocking.
The only viable answer to that question is for her to resign, Gavin Newsom to appoint an interim member, a caretaker, swear that person in, and put that person on the committee.
Motherfucker.
And the only really viable option, in my mind, would be to put Barbara Boxer back in.
Yes.
Well, if,
because she would not run for the following term.
Of course
if
not.
if Babs is in her own mind, she's
well, she is.
Who?
I caught her on an MSNBC program talking about Dianne Feinstein.
Wait a minute. Kind of lost now. Is Babs slipping too?
No, I didn't know. She makes the rounds, so she probably, or you know, I mean, everybody just kind of dismissed it. Jerry Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think Jerry would do it. I really don't.
Why the fuck not? All we need is a placeholder. That's all we need.
I think the optics of Barbara Boxer would be better.
Just a progressive with one genitalia will work, you know, anybody.
I've spent some time talking with Jerry Brown walking down the road at a environmental kind of thing, and Jerry's real happy being retired on his ranch, and I don't think he may accept it if it was offered to him, yes, but
he'd probably say, did you ask Barbara already?
Yeah,
did you not ask Barbara? Oh, you already asked Barbara? Okay, then I'll do it.
Yeah, something of that sort.
Right.
Anyhow, I'd like to move on to this debt ceiling quasi.
Well, before we go there, I have a response from Matt in San Francisco. The Feinstein matter kind of makes you appreciate Nancy Pelosi even more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not kind of. It does. And Stephen New York says Ronald Reagan sleepwalking through history. And you know, Reagan was so far gone. Remember, who here is old enough to remember ketchup as a vegetable?
Yes.
Me.
I am.
And does anybody remember when, I think he was at a Washington Football Club game, and they stuck a microphone in his face and said, Mr. President, what are you going to do about... And even when he was president of the United States, he just had that, you know, cow looking at a new gate look on his face. And Nancy leaned over, and it was caught on the open mic, and said, tell them we're doing the best that we can. It will. We're doing the best that we can.
You got that.
His brains had to be put on the vegetable chart.
And all of this harkens back, of course, to Edith Wilson and Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson had a stroke crisscrossing the country trying to sell support for the League of Nations. And Henry Cabot Lodge, senator from Maine, was steadfast in his opposition because he just wanted to fuck Woodrow Wilson. And Woodrow Wilson had a stroke. And
Massachusetts.
Here's to good old Boston, home of the bean and the, where the Cabots talk on, where the senators, and they talk only to God. Right. But Wilson was, for all intents and purposes, utterly, completely, totally, and absolutely incapacitated. And his wife, Edith, would not let anybody, a physician, nobody, near him. This is one of those little underappreciated moments in American history. And the vice president of the United States was a guy from Tallahassee named Thomas Riley Marshall. And Thomas Riley Marshall had a talent for a good one-liner. Somebody was talking to Thomas Riley Marshall one day and said, "You know, well, don't you think the country needs blah, 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 Mr. Vice President?" And he answered, "What this country needs is a good 5-cent cigar." And he was begged by the Congress, "Mr. Vice President, please declare yourself interim president during the illness of the president of the United States," because it was a country without a president. Nobody could sign a bill into law. The country was hamstrung.
Christ.
Okay?
Yes. Jesus.
And Thomas Riley Marshall, who was an old country lawyer from Tallahassee and no damn dummy and pretty well versed in the Constitution, said, "I'll be happy to do that as quick as you pass me a bill that says I have the power to do it."
And didn't Mrs. Wilson at one point, or maybe more than one point, papers would be delivered to the sickbed of Mr. Wilson, President Wilson.
And she'd shit-can him.
Wouldn't she assist him in writing of the signature?
I think maybe you're right. without even necessarily, well, but I think you're right, Scott. But what's interesting is that after that crisis passed, the Congress harumphed back and forth for a while. Oh, we've got to do something about presidential succession. And then the Depression hit, and, well, then the Republicans took over the presidency, the Depression hit, and that was pretty much the end of it.
And we didn't
Until Ike had his heart attack, and then it was a problem again. Because the constitutional language was such that the vice president only becomes president upon the death of the president.
And not, you can't step in while they're lingering. They've got to be all dead-like.
Yeah, they've got to be pining, you know, for the fjords.
Like JFK.
They've got to be singing with the bleeding choir eternal.
We didn't get the amendment that addressed the situation of a vacancy and succession. Until what, the early 60s?
The 25th Amendment gets ratified in the mid 60s.
Yeah.
After the Kennedy assassination. Yeah. And as carefully as that was drafted, as we demonstrated night after night after night, and I remember Todd being part of these conversations.
Yeah, I remember that.
Section 4 is anything but clear. And the fact that it relies on the cabinet of the president, who are of his same party, to step in and display what the law calls a scintilla juris of integrity and political courage, effectively means that no one will ever trigger Section 4 of the 25th Amendment.
And if Casey Kasem were here, his word would be ponderous, just ponderous.
It's ponderous, man. Get Don on the phone.
Jesus, where are the pictures?
We didn't. Anyway, I got a note from Tom and Sunny San Rafael. DiFi's state of mind. Robin, I think you may be right. A bad case of shingles can be debilitating. It did end my mom. She died of a heart attack, but the shingles brought it on. She was totally out of it mentally as soon as she got the shingles. This is, yeah, really, seriously, get your freaking shingles vaccine.
Did anyone hear the story about still unhung Mike Pence, that he was actually floating the trial balloon around the cabinet about the 25th Amendment?
Oh, yeah, and the minute that got out, everybody, we love Donald Trump, my God, you know.
Right. Go ahead.
No.
Well, Roger was wanting to take this.
So I just wanted to make sure that everybody got their say on that. And let me say this, because we've now crossed into less than 30 minutes to go on our little miracle. We're at 14:50 to go. Which means, I mean, happy news, we finished Friday. We finished last Friday, and we are $50 funded for this past Moran Monday. Funded $50 of Monday. So, that's the whole thing. When we get behind, then we play catch-up. And we're nearly fresh out of April to play catch-up with. And ketchup is a vegetable. Right, Mommy?
You were going there.
Well, of course, Steve. How long have we been talking? I mean, you should be able to predict what I'm going to say by now.
Since the terrestrial radio days,
yes,
we weren't talking, but I was listening. Absolutely.
But playing catch up is rough. So if we could get Monday funded, that would be huge. And that's $250 more dollars. So that's
Roger,
that.
Roger.
Yeah.
Roger,
now, Roger, go.
Debt ceiling. Yeah.
All right. McCarthy, in this debt ceiling bullshit that's going on, has in essence presented a budget plan for the debt ceiling number. And it is to refund and I don't mean refund as in payback. I mean refund as in pack.
Fund again.
Same. Yeah,
RE-fund. Yes.
The same budget that was last time around, except for some, quote, major cuts, unquote, but leave the military as it stands. And I posted in both chat rooms a link to an article out of the White House that if that plan were to be accepted, it would require a 22% cut in every other program. This is a 22% cut for the VA, a 22% cut for Meals on Wheels, a 22% cut in the student lunch program.
SNAP benefits?
Across SNAP benefits.
Yeah.
And does this article, include like NASA and EPA and everything, Roger?
Everything. It would require
student loan repayment, say goodbye to that. That's gone off the table.
A 22% cut on every other item in the budget other than the military. And that link I posted has it listed on how many kids would miss out on lunches, how many people would be cut off Obamacare, how many people would be cut off another one. Anyhow, what pisses me off, I really don't like it when somebody says thank you for your service. It just grates on me. Because
you have no idea how many veterans I've heard say exactly that.
When I went into the service, it was either I joined voluntarily or Uncle Sam handed me an M16 or an M1, depending on exactly when it was, and sent me off to be cannon fodder in Vietnam. I did not really have a choice. Now, am I proud that I served? Yes, I am. Am I proud of the branch I served in? Yes, I am. Will I admit that I joined to dodge the draft into the only branch of the armed forces that has never, ever had a draftee in it? The only one, and that's the United States Coast Guard. But what really pisses me off is most of these fuckers that say thank you for your service are also wearing a red hat. And these are the people that voted for this kind of crap that is now going to cut the VA by 22%, which means that I probably will be eliminated from the Veterans Health Program because I have no service-connected disability. I was not wounded in war. I don't have a Purple Heart, none of that other bullshit. And the Bushes tried to kick me off once before, and I fought them and won. And I do copay and all the rest of it. But all these goddamn Republicans are really, really happy to see, oh, we need to fight over the debt limit ceiling bullshit after Trump jacked it up by 25%. And Mitch McConnell, with his goddamn tax break at the beginning of 2017 tax break, put us into this bind. And they still want to talk about Sleepy Joe and how terrible the Democrats are doing and how the Democrats have caused this whole fucking problem. And if people want to have every other item other than the military, the military budget, the military industrial complex, cut by 22%, you can thank yourself for doing it. End of
rant. Do you, okay, Roger, do you trust any Democrat to maybe AOC? I mean, I'm sure there's a few out there who could sing from the rooftops and say how awful this is and what the repercussions of this budget are. More train derailments, right?
This is foremost,
more children working in the meatpacking plants, right?
Biden
won't sign it.
Biden will not sign it.
Hold on. I hear Steven. Article, he never talks. He never
it
talks.
It comes from the White House.
What? Steven, what were you saying?
Biden will not sign any cuts in those budgets.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I think you're right, and I hope you're right.
I agree with you, Stephen, that he has said he would not sign any of that. What I'm at here is if McCarthy pushes this all the way through and we go up to that drop-dead deadline when the Secretary of Treasury can't play with the books anymore and find any more money to pay the bills that have already been rung up, mm-hmm. and dumps us into a worldwide depression.
Yeah, depression. Yeah.
And to try
make
and blame
29 look like a cakewalk. Yes.
Yeah, and try and blame it on the Democrats because they wouldn't negotiate. But that article I posted is the White House saying this is what he's trying to do. This is why we won't argue with him. By the way, Jeremy, thank you. Yes, I did enjoy that, and I spent a lot more time being a teacher than I did the military. But that,
this is where the Democrats historically fail, and they fail miserably at this type of messaging.
Media,
right?
The media will not point it out. I mean, everybody says, oh, right. MSNBC, the liberal progressive, you can't believe anything.
They still
say,
got corporate paymasters, man. Yeah.
They're not talking
about it either. And hold on. Yeah, before Christopher, before you say that the Democrats are terrible at this, I disagree. They message. Okay. They message consistently. The White House messages consistently. But if the multimillionaire for-profit media that are owned by Republicans refuse to run it, then suddenly you're at tree falling in the woods and no one there to hear it.
Yeah, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. That's very true. Very true.
And another aspect of that is, even if you could come up with a catchy name for what the problem is and list bullet points of how it's going to affect everyday people, it would be McCarthy's, we know the cost of everything and the value of nothing, budget bill, and then list the bullet points of how it's going to affect, you know, your kitchen table situation and your everyday life in the lives of ordinary Americans. If we had a media that would make space for that conversation, people would become aware of it. But a lot of people don't even know that there is a budget, much less what's being cut from it.
Or when the last time an actual budget was passed.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right.
And let me just add one thing here. Because I'm sensitive to this. I got triggered earlier. Because McCarthy, the weaker speaker, put out his bullshit plan. And who ran out to find a camera and a microphone to babble into about it? Anybody? Bueller?
Rudy Giuliani?
No, fuck no.
Well, you know how he likes the camera and the mic. Now, go ahead.
Not the senior senator from West Virginia.
Oh, God. Old Uncle Joe. He's
Joe to the mansion born.
Oh, Jesus.
Who in that bullshit, syrupy, milky voice of his said, well, I applaud Speaker McCarthy for at least providing a way forward in good faith or some such shit as that.
Oh,
crap.
And I couldn't open a website earlier without finding Joe saying that shit. And I get so unspeakably tired of it because, I mean, you know, I'm the mansion whisperer. And I am the discoverer or expositor of the first law of mansions, which has never been known to find, and there is no known exception to it in any known universe, and that is, no one named Manchin ever does anything that benefits someone who isn't named Manchin. And it has been a fetish object of Joe Manchin since at least 2005, that we have got to cut these social programs. Again, I sat in a statewide meeting of the building trades in 2005, maybe 6, and Joe was governor, and we actually had a conversation over a beer about whether Rich Rodriguez was going to leave WVU for the University of Alabama. That's how long ago that was. Rich and Big Hair Rita off to Tuscaloosa. And later on, I heard him tell a bunch of union guys that the entire fabric of America would be torn asunder if we don't do something about Social Security and Medicare. And then, of course, it won't affect y'all. Well, yes, it would. And he talked to people back then by saying, and people would that would get it, he'd get their endorsement by saying, well, you know, he doesn't necessarily agree with us, but at least he's willing to have us at the table for the discussion. And that was his big selling point. You know, well, you know, I'll at least talk to you, and then I'll fuck you.
Was that back during the time where W got in for the second go round?
Oh yeah, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
He wanted to defund or privatize.
Privatize.
Yeah, that's when Dim Leader said, hey, "Well, I won re-election. That means it got me some political capital, and I'm going to spend it."
Jesus. And people were seriously entertaining, or at least speaking about going down that road, which that way lies madness, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, remember, don't forget the grand bargain that Obama was going to do, and that was going to cut the COLA, right?
The grand bargain was, oh Jesus, yeah.
Remember that?
I don't know how much credence to give it now, given his later behavior. But, oh, who? Alan Grayson. Alan Grayson was a member of the House at the time, and he was going around telling a story, and I remember hearing him tell it about being on a plane with Barack Obama, and somebody asking him what his most desired legislative and public policy accomplishment would be, and to hear Alan Grayson tell it, he said, you know, Obama didn't even miss a beat, and he said, well, entitlement reform.
Yeah. See?
I mean,
he hung out with Pete Pearson and that whole crowd.
Yeah. And I remember hissies being thrown on this program and me throwing some of them over all that shit. Pete Peterson?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things people miss on the Social Security number is the insurance side of it. Let us say you're a 22, 23-year-old guy, and you get yourself a job working in the woods, and you go up there, and you've signed all your paperwork, all the rest of that shit, and you got a wife and a couple of kids at home, and you're out there on a logging side and helping a faller, and all of a sudden he falls a tree on your head and plants you 6 feet under where they got to dig you out to take you to the morgue to have the funeral. Your wife and your kids get money until the kids are 21 years old and the wife gets the money until she dies.
Yeah, Paul Ryan.
The point here is...
There you go. Ding, ding, ding. Cowbell.
That what gets said is, well, I can make more money in retirement if I put my Social Security into a 401k plan and sat on it until I retired. Yeah, that's true. But your orphaned kids, or your not orphaned, fatherless kids and your wife would be sitting on the street, or your wife would have to turn into a hooker to buy the groceries to keep your kids fed because you didn't have that insurance. And that little factor right there that every goddamn Republican refuses to acknowledge is another irritating point on me. I ought to go knead the bread, get the bread in the oven instead of sitting here getting pissed off.
Oh, Roger, just tell me it's sourdough. Lie to me if necessary. Tell me it's sourdough.
No, it's sourdough.
Okay, thank you. But, no, Roger, right, and that's why I mentioned Paul Ryan. You know, Paul Ryan's daddy dropped dead when Paul Ryan was a kid. Paul Ryan went to college on Social Security benefits till he was 21.
Till he rode the wiener. Right?
And then stood around at Keggers. And
he rode the wiener.
Yeah, but wait. Before he was wiener riding, he was standing around. He bragged about standing around the keg talking about the day that he would be able to have the power to kill Social Security and Medicare entirely. You know, this is part and parcel of people like Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas stomping on the fingers of people on the rungs climbing up behind him. You get back down there.
Where you belong.
Right. There's all that. And by the way, I want to mention something that Randy Radar sent in a minute ago. We've had a couple of way ahead of the curve moments, you know, so far on the head of the curve, we're on straight road, on the program this evening that may or may not show up in the multimillionaire for-profit media over the weekend or maybe a week from now. I think back to the day that Joe Scarborough was so proud of talking about Jim Jordan and Jack It Off. I think the suits crawled his ass for that one because he hasn't done it since, to the best of my knowledge. But he looked like the grin on his face was the grin on his face was like a little boy who just let a fart that nobody could hear but stunk like hell. Yeah, that little kind of proud sort of.
You got a little hot somebody
will start talking about the things that we've talked about this evening just as a matter of casual conversation a week from now. And Randy Radar said, this is why you have to support this program. That's not me. That's Randy Radar saying that. And I'm not going to sit here and disagree. We come up with some pretty amazing stuff. Just ordinary folks sitting around rapping.
I got one more that hopefully Joe Biden will hear. As the commander-in-chief, he should be able to order that Fox so-called news lying propaganda bullshit shall not be turned on in any common area of any military establishment or affiliated establishment. Simply, it will not be played on the mess deck, will not be played in the rec room, will not be played in the
and you know what, Roger, as a
or the officers club,
as a corollary to that, and I was talking to my campaign colleague Bo Webb about this. He noticed the same thing. The cafeteria on the House side is in the basement of the Longworth House office building. And I saw it when I was there a few weeks back. He saw it when he was there this past week. He said every TV in the entire common area was running what? Fox.
Yeah, he could ban it from any government establishment. They have admitted they are a lying outfit. They paid $787.5 million over lying about the Dominion number. They've admitted they're lying. They've admitted in court they're an entertainment network. They are not a news program, and therefore it shall not be played on any government property anywhere. But as commander-in-chief of the military, it's an easy call to do it for the military. He may have to fight a little bit with the House, but...
It might actually be a winner. And it would be a great way to amplify the fact that they just caught lying their filthy asses off.
Yeah, maybe next week we could carve out some time to talk about fee structure with the cable companies and what the fuck can we do about that? The small people. I mean, basically cut the cord. I mean, what else can we do?
If I tried to cut the cable on this house, I hope you have a spare room, Christopher, because
I'd
have
something else cut off, huh? Yeah.
Boys,
I don't even think I'd be allowed to live out here in the mother-in-law unit.
We got the hot tub.
Speaking of which, I want to go back to an earlier note. I don't know if she's still listening, but hey, Claire, going all the way back to the plastic surgery conversation, and I didn't want to get out of here without mentioning it. Claire's got a very good point. And she referenced the reverence that Asian cultures have for the process of aging itself. Subject line: the looking young, the young, the looking forever young shit. Claire said, we should all really learn from the various Asian cultures of respecting our elders and elevating them for all their love and fight and living, and not, for fuck's sake, not elevate young, elastic skin as if it's so more, much more important than life itself. Claire said, fuck it. I'm 73 in a few days, and I'm proud to look this old and still be alive and not have drooping boobs. So,
them's not fake boobs.
Them's real. And that will be the end of any conversation about those. But I get Claire's point. And there, but I will say in my own defense, there's a little bit of a difference. And Tracy referred to that earlier. I'm just trying to get all the guy off of my face. And, you know, it takes some doing. And that's not going to happen for a long time because, oh, my God, that shit's expensive. But thank you, Claire, for that observation. I did see it, and I did appreciate it. And so, lo and behold, we are at the end of the conversation. I had one other thing. I know what I was going to say. So what Randy Radar said, yeah, we are out in front of the curve, and we're at 1450 now. Thank you so much to everybody who got us there from $1,700. That's $250 we raised this evening. That's almost a full day's funding. Thank you. Thank you so much. And if anybody's listening now, or maybe internet latency or whatever plays a part in it, if you want to help, please help, because I got the Appalachian Power breathing down my neck and a couple of other ones that keep me up at night. And if there was some way to just independently fund this and, you know, do it out of my own pocket, I gladly would. And in years past, way past, we did until we couldn't anymore. So, all help is good help. Thank you so much. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Hey, Gene, it was good to hear from you today. Thanks for the link. Anthrax Coulter. Thank you. Please, because I was delinquent on this derelict on this. Please like and subscribe to the podcast if you listen via the podcast. Leave a comment. Tell your friends and neighbors. There's something special going on here, because it really is special. And this is a conversation like no other. We kind of live in the future here. If you wait a week and a half or 2 weeks, you'll hear it. You'll hear the multimillionaires talking about things we talk about here as a matter of course. I'm Brother Deacon Asa. Yes, tip of the hat to Carol Baker. I remember when she said that. Tell your friends and neighbors. If you're listening on TuneIn, mash that like button, that heart button, and we will eventually get to 1,000 unique listeners. That's wonderful. But whatever podcast platform you listen to, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podbean, we're on every platform imaginable. I don't think we're on iHeartRadio. I could be wrong, but I don't know if we're there or not. But most all the others, we are. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. President Biden took note of the need in this country for environmental justice today, and I'm proud of that. Kind of need him to know that mountaintop removal is still going on. There's a lot of environmental injustice in West Virginia. Yeah, because we've got Governor, Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Injustice in the governor's mansion. for a start. Who, by the way, used COVID pandemic funds to buy Appalachian Bible College a new church van. No shit. Yes, we are on iHeartRadio. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. So, iHeartRadio, too. Coal River Mountain Watch is a proud union shop. And working tirelessly on the AIC Act, which, in fact, is the key to the future of Central Appalachia. Get your booster. You don't want to fuck around with the Arcturus variant. You sincerely do not. Wear your mask when you're, even if there's a remote chance of you being anywhere near the maggots, because they are a diseased lot. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance where humanly possible. 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. Paul, we haven't heard from you in a long time. Need to. Especially with the Arcturus variant out there. Nasty business. You don't want it. And, you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you in a sort of fake, milky, butter-wouldn't-melt-in-his-mouth voice saying, well, I just want to give credit to Speaker McCarthy for showing us a way forward. Avoid that man to the mansion born like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.